So we are at December 2nd, 2016, the second day of Kislev, Tavshanai and Zion. And there are, for the first time in our travels through Bereishis and Shmos, this is actually a mostly halacha-oriented parak. So it's difficult trying to figure out which one to do. But we settled on the following, the issue of Shmura Matzah. I know it's several months away still from Pesach, but yet nevertheless, that's what comes up over the course of this Pasuk. So the Pasuk tells us in Perek Yud Beis, Pasuk Yud Zayin. 17. So the Pasuk tells us, Ushmartem es ha-matzos, ki bi'etzem ha-yom hazeh hotzeisi et tzivoseichem mi'eretz Mitzrayim. That you're going to watch the matzos because it happened on this day, in the midst of this day, on this very day, I will have taken you out of the land of Egypt, and therefore you're going to observe this day forever and ever. It's going to be a law forever and ever. Fine. So this idea of ushmartem es ha-matzos, so that's an interesting question. What does it mean ushmartem es ha-matzos? What seems to be the halacha of Shmura Matzah? What is being added by that discussion? So the Gemara itself has to deal with this, if I were to tell you, I have to ask you, what is Shmura Matzah? What's the reaction? What makes Shmura Matzah different than regular matzah? It looks different, but you can make machine Shmura Matzah also. You can't get distracted by the fact that it looks differently, because that's not really a halachic difference. Or actually, I shouldn't say that. It doesn't seem at first glance, at least, that should be a halachic difference. They're baked. They're similarly baked. The idea of Shmura Matzah is that it was. Something was done l'shem matzah mitzvah. There is some kavana that was put into it at some point that this is going to be for the purpose of the mitzvah. That's what it means to have shmur matzah. Most people just react and say, "Oh, that means that it was guarded longer from chametz." Well, that can't be. I mean, chametz is chametz. It can't just be that it's protecting you from chametz. That's not going to make a distinction. Rather, there has to be something that was done for the purpose of that. This is going to be for the purpose of the mitzvah. So the Gemara discusses this. In Maseches Pesachim, and the Gemara talks about when it has to start. So there are several stages when you could say that it has to be l'shem matzos mitzvah. So the latest point is when it goes into the oven, right? Is it going into the oven for the purpose of matzah? A point before that would be from the point that you start kneading it, K-N-E-A-D, right? You start mixing it together. So maybe it's from that point on you have to go ahead and it happened for the purpose of the Shem Matzos Mitzvah, and then the period before that maybe you would require for the that needs to be the Shem Matzos Mitzvah is from the time that it's cut. Shmira Mishas Kitzira. Already from the time of Kitzira, already from the time of cutting down the wheat, maybe at that point already, you bring this stuff. Maybe at that point already you require the Shmur process already begin then. So that's a question. That is.
That's for Zeb. He's coming.
Oh, that's for Big Zeb.
So that's a question that's left out there in the Gemara. And what do we? How do we paskin? So we paskin that Meikra didn't really. We require Shmira Mishas Lisha, but at Lechatchila we require Shmira Mishas Kitzir. We're talking about Shmura Matzah because that pasuk appears. Shmartem Es HaMatzos appears over the course of this pasuk. So we require, so Me'ikra Din we require again from the time that it gets kneaded together, but L'chavchil we require Mishas Lisha. If you take a look at your Shmura Matzah boxes, or even from many of your not Shmura Matzah boxes, it will say on it, Shmira Mishas Katsira. Mishas Katsira. That was already being watched for the time of Katsira. There are big ceremonies about that, about going down, maybe even when we lived in Phoenix, so my father used to, my parents came to visit once. My father one time came to visit, and he was walking through the airport, and all of a sudden he sees 35 Sakmer Hasidim in the middle of the Phoenix airport. And He thought it was a mirage. You're in the desert. Who knows what you're looking at? And then all of a sudden, one raised his hand and said, no, mincha. And my father looked at his watch and said, it's 10 o'clock at night. No, he didn't. He didn't do that. So there actually was, why was there a group of Sakhmer Hasidim that were coming coming there? So many years ago, in the 60s and 70s, the Satmar Rav, Rav Yoel Teitelbaum, used to come to Arizona, to Tucson, Arizona, because the air was very dry. In fact, when I was moving to Phoenix, before that I lived in Riverdale, I used to drive Rav Meir Twersky sometime. Once in a while, I would drive him to Yeshiva or back from Yeshiva. So when I told him that I got the job in Phoenix, he said, what's in Phoenix? I said, well, you know, there's a shul, there's a school, whatever. And he just looks at me and says, I heard there's a lot of people with asthma in Phoenix because that's what many people used to go there to, because of the dry air in Phoenix. So anyways, when the Sakhmar Rav was in, was there, so he realized, you know, if the air is very dry, there is no dew that forms. It's very interesting. If you take out a cold bottle of soda out of the refrigerator in Phoenix, there's no frost on it. It's just...
Really?
It just looks the same as a warm bottle of soda. It just happens to be cold because of the dew point. The humidity is so low, it doesn't. There's no moisture in the air to fix that thing. No, right. So there's no in the morning in the car. The cars are never frosted over. You don't see that. So he said there's an issue when it comes to matzah. When it comes to the grains of matzah, that it this is really part of a different shiur that I have online called "Why the Best Matzahs in the World Come from Arizona." That issue, because there's no dew that's going to form on the wheat, so that's a chashash, that's a concern with regards to matzah. Sakhmar Rav said that maybe we should look into growing our matzahs here in Arizona. So they went to they tried doing it, and it turned out that it worked very badly because they did the wrong kind of wheat, and someone went back and did research and did the right kind of wheat, but by that time the Sakhmar communities have switched, and in fact there's a major bone of contention between the two Sakhmar communities, the Williamsburg Sakhmar community and the Kiryat Yoel Sakhmar community, is this issue, whether you have to get the matzahs from Arizona or whether it's an Isser Gamor and you're a terrible Eisfarf if you buy your matzahs from Arizona. But you could find it. You could go to stores in Brooklyn, you'll see Matzahs Arizona, you can go ahead and get it. What the reason for that chumrah is probably a shear for another time, available on YU Torah. But anyways, getting back over here, why did we get into it? Oh, so they still go, Ada Yom HaZeh, so the Sakhmar Rav goes in January or something, when they're about time to harvest the wheat, and they have a major ceremony. They go out there, and he does the first katsira, and they cut the wheat, and then they go and farm the rest of the wheat. But this is still a continuous business, Ada Yom HaZeh. So anyways, so that question is out there. What point does one require this shmirah over the matzah that has to be done, l'shem matzus mitzvah? So beyond that question, so again, it's l'chadchila from... We paskin l'chadchila from the time of the katsira, and b'dieved we paskin even from the time of Lisha, so that would be sufficient. Some would even say b'dieved even to the point of Afia would be sufficient. We aim for from the point of Lisha and onwards. In fact, I found that this morning while preparing this, there is a video on YouTube of Martha Stewart. Martha Stewart, in one of her shows, went to the Streitz Matzah Factory to give a little tour of the Streitz Matzah Factory. This video, the clip begins with her having a box of Streitz Matzah and holding up a piece of matzah saying, matzah, termed after the Hebrew word matzah. That's a little odd. But anyway, so you can go and see. But they discuss this actually on the video, that you see that the Mashkiach has to knead it together in order so that we have the kneading already is done. L'shem matzah mitzvah. The video, as soon as that video was over, it linked to another video from the Vasis Nais website that they went to the Manischewitz factory. So just to be equal opportunity. And this year, you can catch videos of both. I think the Streitz Matzah Factory, they closed a year or two ago in the Lower East Side.
Really?
I think they closed I think there's something about it. They were closing the Lower East Side factory and moving someplace else. All right, anyways, back over here. So what about, can a non-Jew then be part of the process? If it has to be done l'shma, can you have a non-Jew then be part of the process? So that the Rush quotes this as a machlokas amongst the Gaonim. He says that according to Rav Achai Gaon, that you're not allowed to have a non-Jew be involved. And Rav Hai Gaon says that you are. This continued to be a machlokas amongst the Rishonim as well. How do we paskin? So the Shulchan Aruch paskins, Ein Lashon Matzos Mitzvah, Ve'lo Ofenosa, Al Yedei Einu Yehudi. You shouldn't have a non-Jew be doing the Lisha, or doing the Afia, doing the kneading, or doing the baking. Ve'lo Al Yedei Cheir Shota V'Katan, nor by a Cheir Shota V'Katan either as well. A Cheir Shtef Shota is dumb, or katan is a katan, a child. So you shouldn't be involved. So why is that? So the Mishnah Berurah comments in Simon Tuf Samach Sif Gimel, Hatam Dichsiv Ushmartam Es Matzot, based on the pasuk that appears in our parak. Umashim Rizev, the Shmir Sha'atam Ishamar Shalot Achmitz, he's chaving the shame Matzah Shal Mitzvah, that your Shmir, you're watching it in order to make sure it doesn't become Chametz, you have to have Kavana that it's for the purpose of the Mitzvah. V'nachbi V'chir Shotav Katan La Bar Shimur Ninu, and they are not those that are able to do the Shimur. However, v'iskimu harbi poskim, that feel Yisrael omen al gavan. What about a Jew standing over the shoulder of the non-Jew? Is that going to be sufficient? Umasirin, and makes sure, and he whispers into the ear the whole time, l'shem matzos mitzvah, l'shem matzos mitzvah. Still, it's not going to work. Shechav l'shem matzos mitzvah, gam kein lo mahani, doesn't work. Beino yotzei dechovaso, afilu b'di'evet. They're not yotzei their obligation, even b'di'evet, however. V'yishmina poskim shemakilin, that they say, no, it is okay that if you have an omid al-gabban, if you have Jews that are standing over their shoulders, that that should be sufficient. That actually should work. So l'chadchila, we try to be machmir, but b'di'evet, the Mishnah Berurah seems to say that that should be sufficient. If you have a non-Jew doing the work and somebody else is omed al gabein, standing standing behind them, making sure that they do it well. In the Streitz factory, they made in this 6-minute video of the Streitz factory, they made a point of saying that all the matzahs are made. I think all the matzahs are made in the basement, and the packaging is upstairs, or maybe it's the opposite. They said everybody on this floor are Jews, and everybody on the other floor are non-Jews. Once it's already baked, so you can have the non-Jews are involved with packaging, but everybody involved with the making process, so they are makbid that they only be Shomer Shabbos, Jews. So the problem, however, though, is, so very nice that you have Shomer Shabbos Jews involved with putting in the grains and doing the kneading, but the problem is it's still a machine. Streitz matzah is making machine matzahs. So is that okay? Can you have a machine take the role of a person with regards to with regards to these halachos? What?
I worked in yeshiva with the matzah back in Crown Heights. I mean, the way it was done, we had like two
hand matzah or factory. A machine.
Hand matzah.
Put it in a big iron oven.
Yeah.
Well, first they have a guy mix it, they time it, they put it in water,
right.
And they bring that group over to, they rolled it.
Okay.
And then.
So what?
Then they put it in. I don't know. So a Jew would be like mixing it, and they would roll it.
All of those, yeah. And a Jew would put it in the oven. Yeah.
We had guys on us with the rollers, sanding them, that's sort of what left over.
Okay.
So that was all.
Oh, but that's a hand matzah factory.
Right.
So you'd have Jews be involved. Now, my question is, okay, but what about using a machine?
What
role can a machine play over the course of this process? So Bruce asked, what does the machine actually do? Is that what your question was?
Yeah.
So what does the machine actually do? So they do the same thing. Someone pours the flour and someone pours the water in.
Right.
Then they set a mixer. So a mixer is what mixes it together. I don't think anyone would say that that actually might be a problem already. Like having the mixing is being done mechanically. And then they take all the dough and pretty much put it in the chute. Uh-huh. And then a machine has it come out and in flat. And then there's a machine that rolls. Once it goes in there, I don't think a person touches it anymore. It goes along a conveyor belt. It gets flattened out. Then the rollers come and make the holes in the matzah. Then they cut it up into square pieces, and it continues, and then goes into an oven along a conveyor belt. That's how it's being done by way of machine. So this, when the machines started, this became a massive machlokas. This was not a little machlokas. This was a very large machlokas that took place in Europe. The first machine matzahs I see here was done by someone named Isaac Singer. Not that Isaac Singer, a different Isaac Singer, in 1838.
1838,
and it led to significant debate led by someone named Shlomo Kluger. Shlomo Kluger passed away in 1869. He was a Rav in Galicia. He wrote over the course of his career 160 svarim. He's probably most famous for a sefer called Ha'elef Lecha Shlomo, which is a condensation, is that a right word? Is a summary of Ha'elef Lecha Shlomo, 1,000 shuvos. So he takes 1,000 and writes them much shorter. So if you want to learn, if people quote Shlomo Kluger, they're generally quoting that sefer, but they're usually not going to quote the long editions, which are 10 pages of very little Hebrew letters.
There's a kid, sir.
Right, this is sort of a kid. He also has a parish on Chumash. He has a parish on Pirkei Avos. You write 160 svarim, you're going to cover a lot of ground. So Shlomo Kluger led the opposition. He was known as the main person who opposed these halachos. He's from Galicia. Galicia is Hasidish land. Yes. Someone actually, and it's available on Hebrew books, someone put together a sefer called Moda Leves Yisrael, where it collected collected many articles where it is of those that prohibited the use of machine matzah. And then there is something called the Bittel Moda, where they collected articles of those that were pro the Shmur Matzah. So it's collected in one sefer. You can find it on Hebrew books. It's only about 80 pages on HebrewBooks.org. So anyways, in Rav Shlomo, so what was Rav Shlomo Kluger's main opposition? So the truth is, this is all against the background of that people made their money off of hand shmur matzah. Poor people made their money off of hand shmur matzah, and by using machine matzahs, you're going to be costing people their parnasa. Now, whether that should be a factor in determining halacha or not, we think it shouldn't be, but it certainly was. And certainly this was going to be a major sociological change to go from hand matzahs to being machine matzahs. So Shlomo Kluger held that it was a major problem, and not only should, by the way, we were only talking about shmur matzah, which is necessary for the Seder.
Right.
Matzah the rest of the time only could be, it just has to not be chametz. Chabad will eat machine matzahs, yeah?
I don't know.
No?
Nobody shouldn't have one.
No, not for the Seder night, for the rest of Pesach. For the rest of Pesach, they won't eat. They don't need matzah.
You don't need
so much matzah, right? Because it's very.
I just usually get smart matzah, obviously. But,
okay.
If you take a look at it, you could say eating matzah is a mitzvah, which is also what the Graf said.
Yes, yeah, so the Vilna Gaon tells that eating matzah throughout all of Pesach is a mitzvah kiyumis, that's true. So maybe they hold that as well. I figured that they probably don't need so much matzah because you can't mix it with anything. It's such a, you have to keep it in plastic bags. Who's got time to do all of that? So they just don't need so much matzah. But anyways, so Shlomo Kluger held that it was you can't use it for the Seder. And not only can you not use it for the Seder, you can't use it for the rest of Pesach either, lest one come to use it for the Seder. So the hand matzah is going to be out. There's another, the main person who opposed him was someone named Rav Yosef Shaul Nathanson. Yosef Shaul Nathanson is the author of a sefer called The Shoal Umeshiv, The Shoal Umeshiv, which literally means the question and the answerer. So he wrote Shailos Utshuvos Shoal Umeshiv, the questions and answers of the question and answerer. So he was the main person who was known for being for it. He said it's not the same as matzah that is produced by a cheir shot of a katan. Why is that? Because the machine is not some magical machine that is operating on its own. How does the machine work? A machine works because a human goes ahead and presses a button. So if a human is pressing the button, so a human is then, by force, involved with the process of making it. So you can't say that it's like a non-Jew making it or a cheir shot of a katan making it. Who made the matzah? Whoever pressed the button. So assuming that a Jew is the one who presses the button, so then that's sufficient. It's similar to when we go to a funeral, so the ideal is that the Jews take part in the entire burial process, that we do the entire kavura. So in Phoenix, Here, you know, it's a big mound of dirt, and we shovel it in. In Phoenix, it was they had to kind of get the dirt from elsewhere. They dug it out with a bulldozer. So what they used to do is they used to, the rabbi used to hold the button of the bulldozer that was holding all the dirt and tilt it slowly while everybody would shovel out of the thing. But you're using the machine essentially to dump the dirt in. So okay, that's okay as long as the Jew is the one who's pressing the button in order for it to go in. So the, and then there's a third distinction. There's somebody that is Rav Shvadron, who is a ancestor of the Rav Shvadron, who became the Maggid of Yerushalayim. So he wrote Shailos Teshuvos Maharsham. So he made a distinction. He said, well, we'll allow machine matzahs, but only machine matzahs that are hand-operated. A hand-operated machine, if it's not a hand-operated machine, so he felt it was inappropriate. So that is the, that was...
When you started, they didn't have electric motors.
Yeah, so that is, so machlokas number one is with regards to the idea of hand shmur, of machine shmur matzah, or just machine matzah, is whether that qualifies as being lishma or whether or not. So is it or is it not? So that's area of machlokas number one.
I mean, hand shmur matzah, to an extent, you're putting the strength, not just pushing the button, of the koach when the person...
Yeah, no, so certainly a hand one would be better, but is it necessary? There is a Gemara. The Gemara that they point to with regards to this din is whether you can use a water mill in order to do shechita. So if you said that's a Gemara in Hulin, Daf Tes Zayin Amud Aleph. So the Gemara says that you can't use an animal with a you can't do shechita of an animal using a mill unless it's done in the first revolution of the mill. Right, because that's considered koach gavra. That's considered putting it in. You've created that, but if it's already the second one, so then that's not your koach anymore. It's already operating on its own. So that's what the shechita that way. I mean, similar to the idea that matzah was required to be lishma, shechita is also required to be lishma. So can you set up a shechita machine? So the Gemara seems to have a problem with setting up a shechita machine, but it could be that the matzahs might be different. Why would we think that matzahs might be different? That it might just require lishma as opposed to koach gavra, meaning a shechita requires a person actually to be involved. Koach gavra, the strength of the person. This doesn't necessarily require my strength, just requires my lishma, it requires my intent. So whatever it is that I do, I've done, it's finished, but my intent in the process is already set, and therefore it works for the rest of the process as well. That's the argument going back and forth. There are those that are... by the way, there is a question that I saw raised that Midrash Asher discusses this and says, well, even those people that are proponents of the machine matzah, none of them say that you can't use a combine in the field. Right? A harvesting combine. So they're called harvesting combine, right? Nobody would say you can't use a harvesting combine in the field. Shouldn't that be the same problem? Aren't you using a machine in order to? If you're going to say that shmur matzah requires lishma mishas ktsira from the time that you cut it, so shouldn't in the field you also require you to do it mishas ktsira? But yet I don't think you're going to see the sacra chasidim shopping across Yuma, Arizona, chopping down wheat stalks one at a time.
There's an operator in the combine. He's pushing the buttons. And
yeah, but it's a machine similar to the machine that's using the bake. So then some discuss that. It could be that the lishma is not the same for both. I mean, lishma, when it comes to the harvesting, is to make sure that that no chametz touches it. Lishma, when it comes to when it comes to the baking, that's to impose the shein matzos mitzvah onto it. That could be, you can make that, Rav Asher Weiss thinks that that's, you're just going to make a distinction that the lishma is different for both. By the way, if we're going to say that lishma before, by the katsira, by the harvesting of it, is only to ensure that it doesn't become chametz, right, so then shouldn't everything have to be lishma? So if I'm not going to be machmir and shmir mishas katsira, I don't care if it becomes chametz. So the answer, no, you don't have to watch. Shmir is guarding it. You're making sure that nothing touches it. You don't have to be watching every grain of wheat for the whole time. Right, so So I remember when I was in like fifth grade, they showed us a video of the matzah making process, and they start and they mentioned in the video something about shmir mishas katsir, the time of katsir, and then they show the video of the guy going across the field, going all the grain, and then going on a train, and the guy. And I thought to myself, all that happens in 18 minutes. That's all. That's how does that happen so quickly? So the answer is that. No, when you have wheat, the halacha is that if you see flour, just plain flour, one has a right to assume the chazaka that that flour is not chametz yet. You have the right to, if it's flour, if once water touches it, so the reaction starts to happen.
Right.
So if you just see dry flour, so you have the right to assume that it's not chametz. Now, does that mean that I can go to Giant in the middle of Pesach and go buy a sack of flour and go make matzah? So, or can I go to Giant the week before Pesach and buy a sack of flour and make my own matzah? So that the answer is no. I mean, that chazaka doesn't apply anymore today to commercial flour because it is treated. It is treated along the way by various processes that we are concerned that there actually is a chametz aspect to regular store-bought flour. Okay, just very quickly, some of the other issues that there are with regards to the machine with machine matzah. Some others that were raised is that you can't have any heat that's added into the process. That we have 18 minutes, you can't let the dough go for more than 18 minutes. That's not a problem. The process from beginning to end of these matzahs factory is like 4 or 5 minutes. It's really not much. But the other issue is that it's not allowed, if there's heat that comes to it during the process, so then that already becomes a problem. That already is concerned that that might speed up the chametz process. So the so Shlomo Kluver actually raised an issue with the first part. He says, who says that a machine working on it has the din of a person working on it? So I think that was rejected. The idea is that the wheat has to be worked on, so a machine is working on it as well. With regards to that, there's heat comes along the way. So the actually, so in the Manischewitz video. So the person who designed the factory was there. He pointed out that he designed the oven so that even though the oven is, he said, 600 degrees, if you put your hand 6 inches away from the opening to the oven, you don't feel any heat. He designed the oven in such a way that the heat is all focusing the other way. He said, if you stand behind the oven, you'll get burnt to death. but in terms of where the matzah is coming in from, so it doesn't actually touch. There's no heat that actually comes to it before it goes in. So that was issue number one. Another issue, which is very interesting, is the issue of square matzahs. That the way it comes out of machines is square matzahs. Now, the same machines that make square matzahs in theory can make circle matzahs, but it's not so simple. So the original machine matzahs, they actually made circle.
Really?
Why did they make them circle? Because they wanted them to look like all the rest of the matzahs. They didn't want this strange square matzah. Who is going to go ahead and use it? The reason they make square matzah, it's easier in the machine. It's also easier to package and ship. And the same reason they make square matzahs, the same reason they want to make square watermelon. That you can fit them all in much better. Better to sell them more easily. But originally,
the machine would naturally, or the belt would be.
Yeah, yeah. So part of the right, but you could. I mean, the cutting could be done in a circle. So originally, it did cut in a circle. They said that that's a problem. Why is that? Some suggest that that's a problem. Why is that a problem? So the Gemara tells us that you're not allowed. The Gemara Mesachim says you're not allowed to make matzah. You're not allowed to use molds to make matzah. That there was some guy who wanted to make animal cracker matzahs or something, and they said that that's not okay. Why? Because you might start hachkening with it, and then you might spend so much time that it's going to become chametz. So as a gezeira, they said, no, you're not allowed to make the matzah into any particular shape. The Gemara there actually raises a question that there's this guy who is such an expert, he won't possibly make a mistake. Is it okay? And the Gemara comments, what, matzos, I forget his name, bites or something like that, Mutarim, Bechol, and everyone else's are Asurim. It can't be that we say low plug, no distinction. We're not going to allow any shaping of the matzah. So some raises this issue in the beginning. Are you shaping the matzah by making it into a circle? That, and also, when you shape the matzah, so what do you do with the excess dough? You throw the dough out? No. What do you do with the excess dough? You put it back into the beginning of the machine. So is you then going to run through the process twice? And that perhaps can lead to an issue.
Then again, it might be. You think about it, Rabbi. You're taking something left over, right? You put it again, and you cut off piece. There could be partial left thing, like recycled 10 times.
Maybe 18 minutes.
Right. So I believe most of these factories, they run in 18-minute cycles.
Yeah,
and every 18 minutes, they stop the cycle, and they throw whatever's left, and they clean the whole machine, and then they start again.
So they
I believe, although at least that's what we did in the old days when they were throwing the things back in.
Right.
Now I'm not sure they do that now. I'm not sure they do it nowadays because the machine is so clean that you just run it continually.
I just think most people buy a machine launch and they expect it to be square, but I may not bother.
You know, I think they don't do it. That's what they call 18 minute matzah. 18 minute matzah is in the first 18 minutes, I believe. But you're also not throwing anything back in. I mean, the machine is such a, running at such an efficient rate that you don't have to, or just don't worry about it.
My experience is going to the matzah bakery in Lakewood and everything is by hand.
Yeah, no, certainly in the hand places, every 18 minutes they stop.
Yeah,
that's also why it's five times the price, or more than that, seven, 8 times the price.
$17 or $18 a pound.
Right. I've said for when I become chief rabbi of the world, that's one of the things. I'm going to take on the mat. I understand it's expensive, but $30 a pound for flour and water is a little, seems to me a little more than excessive. Yeah, let's... After I take on the matzah cartel, I'm going to take on the SR cartel.
We had this problem. I was in Scott, too. It was like this whole thing with the chicken, and finally ran out and did it, and it was all kinds of illegal bags.
All right, I want to just finish up here. Okay, the issue with the square matzah was an issue. There was, they actually made a circle in the beginning, and there is an article, Dr. Sarna, who is the professor of American Jewish history at Brandeis. So he has a history of Manischewitz, and he talks about the popularization of square matzah. This is where I was able to get some of the sources for this. He actually has ads from the journals, the Pardes journals, that was the Torah journal in America during the 30s, 40s, etc. So the ads there are also very historically interesting. There are a lot of ads for Coca-Cola, actually, in those, saying that it's kosher for Pesach, etc. That's another whole shiur about how Coke got its hashkacha. So that's issue number one. But also has ads that the matzah bakeries put in to say that, no, we're kosher, and these people agree with us, and they're... Sarna's article is about the fact that Manischewitz gave donations to a certain yeshiva, and they counted it as a business expense. How they counted it as a business expense? Because by giving money to this yeshiva, they were hoping to ingratiate themselves with the religious masses so that they'd be comfortable buying the Manischewitz matzah. So they counted it as a marketing expense, a donation to a yeshiva. And so there's a lot of interesting things that they're right. Why did they count it as a charitable? Maybe they didn't have that law back then.
Right.
I don't know. I wondered the same thing. If you count it as a charitable expense, so it's the same tax deduction.
Yeah.
All right, maybe it's not. So then there's also the general issues with regards to chadash min haTorah or not. There's a Ksav Sofer who makes a point that he held of his father's idea that we shouldn't be changing anything, but yet the quality goes up. If the quality is better, so then maybe we should be looking to change things or not. And then you have the issue with the poor people. Should we not do certain things because it's going to lend to an economic plight of poor people? So that's another question that is out there. But anyways, very beyond the halachos of the machine matzah debate, there's also a lot of sociological implications as well. All right, we'll stop here. Have a good Shabbos.